Christy, when did a young Christy Watkin know she was destined to be a doctor? Do you remember the day?
I remember the year. I remember I was 16 years old, and it was sort of the time where everybody was asking what you were going to do after high school, what you were going to do with your life. And I don't recall why I said I was going to be a doctor. I just know that's the first time it came out.
Interesting.
My mother was an emergency room nurse and a clinic nurse. She stopped nursing basically when I was born. But I remember all of her stories of nursing, and my sister has gone into nursing. I think it was sort of a topic that must have been discussed as I was growing up with healthcare.
Family business.
Yeah.
This has been a tough year, for a year and a half on everybody. I mean, globally, nobody really holds it's been tough on all of us, but I would imagine as a physician and as a hospital, a doctor, an administrator, you know, doctor in the hospital, incredibly tough on you knowing what to do, what not to do. What has it been like over this past year and a half plus? What's life been like for you? It's got to be different than any other experience thus far.
I think for all of the healthcare providers in the hospital, it's just a very steep learning curve. It's a new illness that we didn't know anything about. It's not knowing how severely our community is going to be affected by it from the get-go. You know, there were really astronomical projections that we had early on in the pandemic, and we sort of got prepared and ready with those projections in mind. And then for Alaska and for Homer especially, our pandemic surge didn't happen at that time. So we sort of bolstered up all of our resources and then waited. And I think that now that we have more of a surge here in town and we see many more patients hospitalized, it's again that steep learning curve of treating a new illness that we weren't trained to treat specifically. You know, COVID wasn't around when any of us were in training. And then also just the strain that it puts on resources, both personnel resources and equipment resources, and just kind of always feeling like you're just trying to stay above water with keeping those resources where you need them. I think it's been really taxing on everybody, like you said, globally and certainly community-wide, and also really felt at the hospital.
One of my first interviews, we went into a special reports mode here on Top of the World Radio. And one of my first interviews was with Dorotha, spokesperson for the hospital. And I asked her, just point blank, question number one, do we have enough ventilators? And I'm not sure that where we sit today, a year and a half later, if that's even a relevant question. You tell me, is that something that's relevant now in the treatment of patients that are needing hospitalization?
It's certainly relevant. What we also need, in addition to kind of your standard mechanical ventilators, COVID is a little bit different than many of the respiratory illnesses that we're used to treating in the past. So we're using a lot more what's called high flow nasal cannula ventilators, which can provide really high volumes of oxygen, up to 60 liters per minute, but is not a typical mechanical ventilator where somebody has an actual tube down their throat that is helping them to breathe. So we're using more of that. We're using more of what's called BiPAP, which is a positive pressure ventilatory method that also is not mechanical ventilation. These are steps that previously would have been taken to prevent somebody from going on to mechanical ventilation. And we're relying much more heavily on those for the treatment of COVID. Some patients will still require mechanical ventilation, but we're really trying much longer periods of time with these other oxygenation strategies before we put somebody on a mechanical ventilator. And those are things that we've had to increase our supply of. So when the pandemic started, our hospital had one high flow oxygen ventilator. We had two of what's called the BiPAP machines. And on our unit, we had access to three mechanical ventilators. There were certainly more in the community that during a surge we could pull from. And I think that number made it up to 9 at one point. But now we have two high flow ventilators, and we're working on procuring a third one. We have three BiPAP machines, and then we still have our standard three ventilators that we've been using in acute care as well.
And famously, from the start, Dr. Fauci said he didn't want to discuss the fact that there was efficacy in using face masks early on because he wanted to make sure that first care and responders and people in your line of work were able to get their hands on enough protection equipment. So Mm-hmm. Is the supply chain to your hospital been interrupted, or do you have the gowns and the gear and the masks and everything you need?
We currently do have them. Earlier on in the pandemic, they were harder to come by, and we had certain protocols that allowed us to reuse some of that. And luckily for us, and you know, our surge came later, and therefore we had time to kind of get those supplies up. So we do have a good supply of N95 respirators. We have a good supply of PAPRs, which are pressurized air purifying respirators that we can wear in and out of these rooms, but also protect us from contracting COVID when we're in there. And so currently our supply chain looks quite good. I don't know how tenuous that is. I don't know, you know, some of that is outside of the hospital's control what the supply chain looks like. But we have not had to reuse any single use disposable item for really the duration that I've been treating this in the hospital.
And you also work with the Homer Medical Clinic, right, in the prevention or the pre-treatment prior to anybody needing hospitalization?
That's correct. Most of us that work in the hospital are also employees at Homer Medical Clinic working outpatient clinics.
And what's been, I mean, we all want to know, look, none of us want to end up, none of us want to see you. No offense. No,
right.
Nobody wants to see you. So let's talk about that pre-treatment, that preventative maintenance before you get there. If somebody tests positive, here's what I think happens. And I don't know. I've not yet tested positive. Been tested many times due to exposure or maybe some mm-hmm. symptoms, but never positive. Here's what I think you're told. I think you're told, I'm so sorry, you're positive. And then kind of maybe crickets, or maybe that's older information. Maybe now there's a prescriptive, hey, this is what you do. This is where you go. What does the average person do when they're tested positive?
So our screening and swabbing sites are the people who notify all of the positive tests. And what they tell people when they're called is that they've tested positive, that they have COVID, and that they encourage them to reach out to their primary care provider. I can't speak for the other clinics, but what Homer Medical Clinic does is they get a list of our patients that have COVID, and they reach out. We actually have a nurse that reaches out daily to connect with these patients and to see how they're doing, to talk to them about whether or not they might qualify for the monoclonal antibody treatment that's available here in town. And that is a treatment that is specifically given earlier on in the course of COVID, within the first 10 days, but ideally within the first 3 to 5 days for the most efficacy. And the whole purpose of that monoclonal antibody therapy is to prevent someone from going on to develop severe illness or going on to end up in the hospital, end up on a ventilator, or passing away from COVID. And so nurses at Homer Medical Clinic are reaching out and connecting with patients to see if they qualify for that therapy and to get them kind of on the path to receiving that therapy. But I think that some of it is a little bit on the patient to reach out to their primary care clinic as well. And there are telemedicine appointments available, so they don't have to come into the clinic, but they can connect. And there are also resources such as pulse oximeters that we can give out in the clinic that are being given out at home health as well, so that patients can monitor their oxygen levels and make sure that they're staying in that mild to moderate illness that can be taken care of at home instead of crossing over into more moderate to severe disease in which they need to come into the hospital and receive care.
The only information I really have is anecdotal. All of us are just doing the best we can, I think, with what we've got available. Sure. And everybody that I know, this again, just from my experience, limited as it is, everybody I know that's tested positive and received, gone on to receive the monoclonal antibodies has done very, very well. I'm trying in my own world to decipher, okay, amongst them, which were vaccinated, which were not, and kind of deciphering the information. But here's what I don't know. Dr. Martinez, I don't know what monoclonal antibodies are. What is that? What's the process? What is it?
So monoclonal antibodies are a therapy that is used to prevent COVID from infecting more cells in the body. It actually attaches to that spike protein on the virus, and it prevents that virus from entering host cells, from entering the cells in your own body and replicating there. So the way to think about it would be that it essentially takes your viral load and lowers the amount of viral load that your body will have to contend with during the illness. And statistically, what it's shown to do is that if given early on in the disease process, it's shown to prevent that worsening that we tend to see around day 7 to day 12 with COVID, to prevent patients from going on to develop respiratory failure, the need for hospitalization, the need for higher level oxygen therapy. And eventually, it's also shown to reduce death rates and to reduce ventilator rates.
You mentioned a surge earlier that I remember the community coming together, the medical community setting up in the church gym and all these extra beds and everything back in mid-2020weren't needed. It just wasn't. But you mentioned the surge came on later. What do you think caused that? What's your read on why Homer specifically or even Alaska began to surge this year rather than last?
I think that it's primarily the Delta variant. The most recent kind of what I'm terming the surge would have happened towards the end of July early July. And most of these cases, 95% plus up at the state level, were found to be the Delta variant. And the Delta variant is more contagious. It seems to be affecting younger and healthier people. And part of the explanation for that is that many of the patients that were high risk with the initial variants of COVID went out and got vaccinated. And so you have the older population and patients with a lot of medical comorbidities and other illnesses being taken out of the higher risk categories for Delta because they have been vaccinated. And that leaves a younger and healthier population that we're seeing come in with Delta variant.
And obviously you can't discuss patient particulars, but I'm curious if you're noticing anything unusual or something that you... The number of patients that are coming in needing the oxygen, needing the acute care that you provide at the hospital, is there a trend or a pattern you can see relative to vaccinated, unvaccinated age? Because in the beginning, we all thought over 65 is the most at risk. Are you seeing anything different with this second variant?
Absolutely. Just to give some statistics, since this, what I would consider the second surge, the Delta variant starting in early July this year, maybe late June, we've had 49 individuals hospitalized with COVID since that time. Of those, five of them were vaccinated. Four of the five of those that were vaccinated had immunocompromising conditions that may have meant that the vaccine was not quite as effective in them due to their immunocompromised status. And so I think that the biggest trend that we're seeing is that we are hospitalizing significantly more unvaccinated versus vaccinated individuals. And the other big difference is just that those ages are really going down into the 40s and even the 30s of individuals that are hospitalized with high oxygen needs. And these are not necessarily individuals with significant chronic medical conditions. The overwhelming pattern is that they are unvaccinated individuals.
Yeah, I guess a question was put to me, are there any reactions? Have you had anybody hospitalized or have you treated anybody as an adverse reaction to the vaccine or the monoclonal antibodies?
To the monoclonal antibodies, there have been two adverse reactions that I'm aware of. They were both treated, I would say, within the emergency department or even there at home health where they're giving the monoclonal antibodies. And these would be considered kind of hypersensitivity reactions that they had. We've given over 200 of the monoclonal antibodies, so that rate is very low, and nobody was hospitalized related to those adverse reactions. I'm aware of one individual being hospitalized for an adverse reaction to the vaccine. I think that the large majority of vaccine-related reactions are self-limited, they're mild in their severity. But I think that there certainly have been some outpatient cases of individuals who felt that they had more prolonged symptoms and conditions related to that vaccine. I think that what I would recommend to all patients is just to reach out to their primary healthcare provider and discuss the vaccine if they're hesitant or if they're leaning away from the vaccine, to just kind of get the opinion of somebody who knows them well and knows their medical history well to answer what is their risk of getting this vaccine versus what is their potential benefit from the vaccine. And overwhelmingly, I think that the average individual is going to be benefited from the vaccine versus experiencing an adverse reaction to the vaccine. But there are certainly some healthcare conditions out there where they would need to speak with their doctor and see if the vaccine was going to give them any potential harm.
All right. Dr. Christy Martinez, thank you. And I appreciate you being here and having been there throughout all of this. I know that yourself and the rest of the staff, administration on down to, you know, the service tech providers in the hospital, and then of course all of the people providing patient care. It has to have been an incredible amount of stress thus far, and it, as you say, it continues. So thank you for being there for us, for both the COVID patients, but also the rest of us who need medical care. So you're very much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me come on and speak about the state of our hospital and what we're doing right now to treat and prevent COVID. Good God Almighty, I hope you'll find me praising your name no matter what comes. I can't count the times I've called your name some broken night, and you showed up and patched me.